you all very much for coming. And if you could do a cell phone check, make sure that your cell phones are tame. This is Bhagavad Gita as it is, 13th chapter, texts 1 and 2. Can we give to Shamsundar Prabhu? He's the same one. Arjuna Vacha,
Arjuna Vacha,
Prakritim Purusham Chaiva,
Prakritim Purusham Chaiva,
Kshetram Kshetragyameva
Cha, Kshetram Kshetragyameva Cha,
Etad Veditum Ichchami,
Etad Veditum Ichchami,
Gyanam Gyeyam Chakeshava,
Gyanam Gyeyam Chakeshava,
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha,
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha,
Idam Shariram Kaunteya,
Idam Shariram Kaunteya,
Kshetram Ityabhidhiyate,
Kshetram Ityabhidhiyate,
Etad yo vetitam prahu,
Etad yo vetitam prahu,
Kshetragya iti tad vidaha,
Kshetragya iti tad vidaha,
Arjuna vacha,
Arjuna vacha,
Prakritim purusham chaiva,
Prakritim purusham chaiva,
Kshetram kshetrajnam evacha,
Kshetram kshetrajnam evacha,
Etat veditam ichchami,
Etat veditam ichchami,
Gyanam gyeyam cha keshava,
Gyanam gyeyam cha keshava, Shri Bhagavan Vacha,
Idam Shariram Kunteya,
Idam Shariram Kunteya,
Kshetram Iti Abhidhyate,
Kshetram Iti Abhidhyate,
Etad Yo Vetitam Prahu,
Etad Yo Vetitam Prahu,
Kshetrogya Iti Tadvidaha,
Kshetrogya Iti Tadvidaha, Arjuna Vacha,
Prakritim Purusham Chaiva,
Prakritim Purusham Chaiva,
Kshetram
Kshetragyam Evacha, Etad Veditum Ichchami, Gyanam Gyeyam Chakeshava, Shri Bhagavan Vacha,
Idam Shariram Kaunteya,
Kshetram Iti Abhidhiyate,
Kshetram Iti Abhidhiyate,
Etad Yo Vetitam Prahu,
Etad Vetitam Prahu,
Kshetragya Iti Tadvidaha,
Kshetragya Iti Tadvidaha.
Arjuna vacha,
Prakritim purusham chaiva,
Prakritim purusham chaiva,
Kshetram
kshetram jnana eva cha,
Etad veditum ichchami,
Etad veditum ichchami,
Gyanam
gneyam cha keshava,
Shri Bhagavan uvacha,
Shri Bhagavan uvacha,
Idam Shariram Kaunteya,
Kshetram Iti Abhidhyate,
Kshetram Iti Abhidhyate,
Etad Yo Vetitam Prahu,
Evam Yo Vetitam Prahu,
Kshetram Jna Iti Tadvidaha,
Kshetram Jna Iti Tadvidaha,
Arjuna Vacha,
Arjuna Vacha,
Prakritim Purusham Chaiva,
Prakritim Purusham Chaiva,
Kshetram
Kshetragyameva cha,
Etad Veditum Ichchami,
Etad Veditum Ichchami,
Gyanam Gyeyam cha Keshava,
Gyanam Gyeyam cha Keshava,
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha,
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha,
kaunteya
idam shariram kaunteya
kshetram iti abhidhiyate
kshetram iti abhidhiyate
etadyo veti tam prahu
etadyo veti tam prahu
kshetrajna iti tadvidaha
kshetrajna iti tadvidaha
Arjuna uvacha prakritim purusham caiva kshetram kshetrajnam eva cha etad veditum icchami gyanam geyam cha keshava shiva bhavan uvacha idam shariram kaunteya kshetram iti abhidhiyate etadyo veditam prahu kshetrajna iti tadvidaha
Ladies want to chant?
Arjuna vacha prakritim purusham caiva kshetram kshetrajnam eva cha etad veditum icchami gyanam geyam cha keshava shri bhagavan uvacha Iram shariram kaunteya kshetram iti abhidhiyate etadyo veditam prahu kshetrajna iti tadvidaha Arjuna uvacha Prakritim purusham caiva kshetram kshetrajnam eva cha etad veditum icchami gyanam geyam cha keshava shri bhagavan uvacha idam shariram kaunteya kshetram iti abhidhiyate etadyo veditam prahu kshetrajna iti tadvidaha
Arjuna uvacha
Arjuna said
prakritim nature
Purusham,
the enjoyer.
Cha,
also.
Eva,
certainly.
Kshetram,
the field.
Kshetragyam,
the knower of the field.
Eva,
certainly.
Cha,
also.
Etat,
all this.
Veditum,
to understand.
Icchami,
I wish.
Gyanam,
knowledge.
Gyeyam,
the object of knowledge.
Cha,
also.
Keshava,
O Krishna.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
The personality of Godhead said.
Idam,
this.
Shariram,
body.
Kaunteya,
O son of Kunti.
Kshetram,
the field.
Iti,
thus.
Abhidhiyate,
is called.
Etat.
This,
Yaha,
one who,
Veti,
knows,
Tam,
he,
Prahu,
is called,
Kshetragyaha,
the knower of the field,
Iti,
thus,
Tadvidaha,
by those who know this. Arjuna said, O my dear Krishna, I wish to know about prakriti, nature, purusha, the enjoyer, and the field and the knower of the field. and of knowledge and the object of knowledge. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "This body, O son of Kunti, is called the field. And one who knows this body is called the knower of the field." Purport. Arjuna was inquisitive about Prakriti, nature, Purusha, the enjoyer, Kshetra, the field, Kshetragya, its knower, and knowledge, and the object of knowledge. When he inquired about all these, Krishna said that this body is called the field, and that one who knows this body is called the knower of the field. This body is the field of activity for the conditioned soul. The conditioned soul is entrapped in material existence, and he attempts to lord it over material nature. And so, according to his capacity to dominate material nature, he gets a field of activity. That field of activity is the body. And what is the body? The body is made of senses. The conditioned soul wants to enjoy sense gratification, and according to his capacity to enjoy sense gratification, he is offered a body or field of activity. Therefore, the body is called kshetra, or the field of activity for the conditioned soul. Kshetragya, now the person who identifies himself with the body, actually who shouldn't identify himself with the body, is called Kshetragya, the knower of the field. It is not very difficult to understand the difference between the field and its knower, the body and the knower of the body. Any person can consider that from childhood to old age, he undergoes so many changes of body, and yet is still one person remaining. Thus, there is a difference between the knower of the field of activities and the actual field of activities. A living conditioned soul can thus understand that he is different from the body. It's described in the beginning, Dehi Nosmin, that the living entity is within the body and that the body is changing from childhood to boyhood, from boyhood to youth, and from youth to old age, and the person who owns the body knows that the body is changing. The owner is distinctly kshetragya. Sometimes we think, I am happy, I am a man, I am a woman, I am a dog, I am a cat. These are the bodily designations of the knower. But the knower is different from the body. Although we may use many articles, our clothes, etc., we know that we are different from the things used. Similarly, we also understand by a little contemplation that we are different from the body. I or you or anyone else who owns the body is called Kshetragya, the knower of the field of activities, and the body is called Kshetra, the field of activities itself. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurn Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadhati Shapadantikam Bandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Shagrajatam Sahagana Raganatan Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kam Shana Gaurangi
Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vansha Kolpitarubhyascha Kripa Sindho Vyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasani Gaudhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Arjuna Vacha Prakritim Purusham Chayava Kshetram Kshetragyameva Cha Etad Veditam Ichchami Gyanam Gayam Chakeshava Shri Bhagavan Vacha Idam Shariram Kaunteya Kshetram Ityabidhiyate Etad Yo Veti Tam Prahu Kshetragya Ititad Vidaha. We're beginning the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita can be seen as having three sections of six chapters each. The first six chapters are said to deal with karma yoga, the middle six with bhakti yoga, and the last six with jnana yoga. Of course, in all the Bhagavad Gita, the real topic is bhakti yoga. And we find that throughout. But the bhakti yoga is seen in terms of karma yoga, jnana yoga, and in the middle six, especially bhakti yoga by itself. Srila Prabhupada compared this to a sandwich where the bread is on the outside and the real stuff's on the inside. Mm-hmm. Or a book where the covers are on the outside and the substance is in the middle. So the Bhagavad Gita in the middle six chapters, devotional service is especially the topic protected by the chapters on either side. But bhakti yoga is actually the topic throughout. So beginning the discussion of knowledge, Arjuna has some questions. What is prakriti? What is purusha? What is kshetra? What is kshetragya? What is gyan, knowledge? What is gaya, that which is to be known? All of these questions begin the chapter, and Lord Krishna will respond one by one. The first topic that he takes up, and it's especially significant throughout the chapter, is the distinction between kshetra and kshetragya. As Srila Prabhupada explains, kshetra means the field of activities. And the field is this body. This is our field in which we work, made up of a particular set of senses. There are five knowledge-gathering senses and five working senses. The knowledge-gathering senses are the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, and the sense of touch. Through these knowledge-gathering senses, we find out things. How hot it is, how cold it is, what things look like, what things sound like, how things smell. And then we act upon what we know with five acting senses, karmendriya, the arms, legs, arms, legs, tongue, anus and genitals. Five active senses. So the senses are received, or the senses constitute this body. The rat has one kind of set of senses. The cat has another set of senses. The bird has another set of senses. The tree has another set of senses. Different bodies with different knowledge-gathering senses and different active senses. Of course, the tree is not very active. It doesn't get to walk around. It's stationary. Stavra and Jagrama. The living beings are divided into those who can move and those who can't move. But they all have their senses. Sometimes the senses are very undeveloped. Sometimes they're highly developed. There are all sorts of different species of life, 8,400,000, with different senses. So these are described as the field of activities. Yes, please move up. More people can fit. Yeah. So the body is described as the field of activities. And then there's the knower of the field. The person who interprets the knowledge received from the senses. The eyes aren't actually seeing anything. They're just instruments. The senses are also described as karana, instruments. The microscope doesn't see anything. The telescope doesn't see anything. And so on. You see. So the eye is just another one of those mechanical things. It doesn't actually see anything, but it transmits information. And finally, who is it that's perceiving that information? That's you. That's the knower of the field. Our godbrother, Sataputta Prabhu, has analyzed this in his book, Mechanistic and Non-Mechanistic Science. Just drawing this distinction between the field and the knower of the field. Krishna says, this body is the field. And Sataputta has analyzed, let's take the sense of sight. There's something out there, and it's a light, and a light bulb, let's say, and it sends little beams, and it shines through the lens, and it goes to the rods and cones on the retina. Okay? So the rods and cones aren't actually seeing anything. They just take that light and transform it into another kind of energy, kind of electrical energy, which then moves along the optic nerve. The optic nerve isn't seeing anything, it's just transmitting this energy. And then the optic nerve sends it to the brain. And there are these little brain cells. Brain cells aren't really seeing anything. But they're, again, dealing with electrical pulses, and they're sending out their own electrical pulses, and they're pulsing around. But finally, the seer is different from the brain. The brain can be analyzed as it's just chemicals moving around in certain ways, acting in certain ways, and creating measurable levels of electrical energy, sometimes higher, sometimes lower, sometimes going this way, sometimes going that way. But that's not the actual perceiver. The perceiver, we feel ourselves to be different. We say, I am conscious. The brain cells don't say, I'm conscious. The optic nerve doesn't say, I'm conscious. The rods and cones don't say, I see something. I'm finally different from all of those things. I can put all of those things over here and myself over here in different categories. So finally I'll decide that I'm not this body, that I'm not this field of activities. When I first met Sataputta, we discussed something else. Who's the physics person here? Do you have any physics guys? You know, all doctors and engineers. Okay. But according to pretty elementary quantum physics, because that's the only kind I understand, when there's a system, the presence of an observer of the system changes how the system works. That's pretty elementary quantum physics. That any closed system, if observed, acts differently. And the famous experiment is there.
Heisenberg's principle.
Heisenberg's
there. and the system can be described by Schrodinger's equation, right? So there's the system, and then there's the observer. And the observer is different from the system. He's outside the system, and that's why the system is changed by his presence. So if you analyze, practically your whole body can be put as the system. If you're seeing a light, the light is part of the system. The waves of light that are entering the eye, they're part of the system. The lens and the retina and the optic nerve, they're all part of the system. The brain cells are all part of the system. But finally, there's an observer who's seeing that system, who's apart from that system, and whose presence changes the way that system is mathematically described. So finally, you end up with two things, the system and the observer of the system, where Krishna says the field and the knower of the field. The two are different. That's the essential point. It's the same point that was made in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, in Srila Prabhupada's words, I'm not this body. That the body is changing from childhood to youth to old age, but I'm the same person. I remember when I was running and jumping as a child, I don't do that anymore. But because the senses have changed, the body has changed, the field has changed. Like when you have an old car, you know, you have to baby it, you have to give it a kick someplace, or whatever you have to do to keep it going. But it's not the same car that you had when it was shiny new and had that new car smell to it. Now it's an old car. But you're the same person. The driver is the same person, but the car has aged. The car is now a different car, really, from the one you had. So this body is changing, or Krishna's other example is clothing that we're changing. So in this lifetime, we're changing from body to body, and finally, tata dehantara prapti, there's change of body completely. And one goes to the next life. Let's see what else is here. Prabhupada mentions the designations of the knower. That is, when the knower of the body identifies himself wrongly with this body, then he thinks himself in terms of the designations of the body. This is an American body. This is a white body and this is a black body. This is a tall body and this is a short body. This is an American one. This is an Indian one. This is a French one. This is a German one. These are all designations of the body. And I'm a man, I'm a woman, I'm this, I'm that. And people think of themselves in terms of the designations. In the recent political election, when different candidates were running against one another, it was predictable that there was a women's vote and there was a men's vote. And because the women were thinking, I'm a woman and therefore I want to vote for this guy. I'm a man. And as much as they talked about, you know, we're not this or that or the other thing, women always voted like women, the men always voted like men. Statistically, not always, but you could chart it. Because I'm identifying that I'm a woman and woman's issues matter to me, or I'm a man and man's issues matter to me. Or the Hispanics will get up and cheer, yeah, our girl's been nominated for the Supreme Court. She has nothing to do with me, but because my body and her body are have some connection, they're both Hispanic bodies. So I think that somehow or other something has happened that I should wave a flag about. And we see in terms of these designations. Right now, if you're an Arab, ooh, that's bad. You got the wrong designation. People will, you get an extra pat down before they'll let you on a plane. People will want to sit a couple of rows away from you and they'll be nervous if you're on their flight. Or from another point of view. Anyway, so much we can deal with that. Call the dog a bad name and hang them because they're Arabs. They're probably terrorists. Because they're terrorists, we can invade their country. That's standard politics. So designations, that's the point. That we see the world in terms of these bodily designations and identify ourselves with these bodily designations. I'm a man, I'm a woman, perhaps I'm a cat, I'm a dog. And the knower is none of these things, but he falsely identifies. Therefore, Prabhupada said he's supposed to be the knower, but he doesn't actually know. He doesn't know clearly that he's not this body. He doesn't see clearly the distinction between the field and the knower of the field. In the first six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, the knower of the body, the living entity, and the position by which he can understand the Supreme Lord are described. In the middle six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the relationship between the individual soul and the supersoul in regard to devotional service are described. The superior position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the subordinate position of the individual soul are definitely defined in these chapters. The living entities are subordinate under all circumstances, but in their forgetfulness, they're suffering. When enlightened by pious activities, they approach the Supreme Lord in different capacities, as the distressed, those in want of money, the inquisitive, and those in search of knowledge. That is also described. Now, starting with the 13th chapter, how the living entity comes into contact with material nature, and how he is delivered by the Supreme Lord through the different methods of fruitive activities, cultivation of knowledge, and the discharge of devotional service are explained. Although the living entity is completely different from the material body, he somehow becomes related. This is also explained. This 13th chapter is very informative. It deals with not only the difference between the living entity and his body, but also how the two got together. Why should I be connected with this body? It's ridiculous, isn't it? To be chained to this body, which is like a dying animal, which is subject to so many troubles, which gets old, gets diseased, which dies. Why do I want to have anything to do with any of that? It's unnatural for me. I want to live forever. Even a cockroach wants to live forever. You try and step on him, you'll see he runs away. Because he wants to go on living forever. But this body is just the opposite. It's so troublesome, and even though I say, well, it may be troublesome, but it's me, then I can't keep it. So it's a very oil and water sort of combination. The two don't go together very well, and yet they're, as if inseparable, connected. So the one may very well wonder, why is that? Why should they be associated? And that will be described in this 13th chapter. The Lord will go into it in some detail, but essentially it's because of our desire. Asango hiyam purusha, the living being has no real connection with material nature, but by a kind of mental concoction, by imagination, sankalpa, we think that we will enjoy the resources of the material nature. Purusha, this word is there. Purusha and prakriti. Prakriti means the material nature, and purusha means the enjoyer. we imagine that we will enjoy the material nature, when actually we ourselves are another kind of prakriti, the superior nature, but we're not actually the enjoyers. The enjoyer is Krishna. But we're imagining that we're enjoyers, and by that imagination, we become connected with prakriti. By that imagination, we become connected with material nature. Yes. Anything. I imagine that I'm going to enjoy something, so I go out and buy it, and now I'm attached to it. Or I imagine that I'm going to enjoy this woman or this man, and so we become attached. As husband and wife, or boyfriend and girlfriend. We had no connection, but because there's some imagination going on, I will be happy. She's thinking, I will be happy. He's thinking, I will be happy. And so they become associated, although there was no association. So the living entity thinks that he'll be happy exploiting the resources of the material nature. But the result is that he becomes entangled and suffers. And that's what's going on in the material world. Purusha sukha dukkha nam. What is that? Bhoktritve hetu ruchate. The living entity himself is the cause of his own enjoyment or suffering. Because it's he who imagines that he can exploit the material nature. So that will be described, how the living entity changes from one body to another, how the subtle body carries the living being from one gross body to another. Very interesting topics will be described in this 13th chapter by the Lord in response to Arjuna's question. But the first is this basic distinction between material nature, the field of activities, this body, and the knower of the field. And then the Lord will say in the next verse, Kshetragyam chapi mam vidhi sarva kshetreshu bhavata. I'm also the Kshetragya, but I'm the super Kshetragya. We know our field. I know my field of activities, you know yours. But I don't know yours, you don't know mine. If you're feeling some pain in your foot or toothache or just tiredness or whatever, you feel it, but I don't feel it. If I get a thorn in my foot, I feel it. You don't feel it. Because I'm the knower of this body and you're the knower of that body. But Krishna knows what's going on with all the bodies. Srila Prabhupada's example is that in an apartment building, I'm the owner of my apartment, you're the owner of your apartment. You know what's going on in yours, I know what's going on in mine, but the landlord is the owner of all the apartments. He's the super owner. So Krishna is the super owner of all the bodies and the super knower of everything that's going on. So as Srila Prabhupada mentions, the Lord is always superior and the living being is always subordinate. But at the present moment, we're forgetting the Lord and we're busy trying to be superior in this material world and failing very badly. Therefore, our business is to turn toward Krishna, to serve Krishna. We were discussing this morning that we're busy serving the cat, the dog, the boss, the nation. But our real service is meant for Krishna. As long as we're serving the cat, the dog, the family, the nation, we'll have to stay here in this material world. But when we direct our service propensity toward Krishna, then our life becomes successful. Well, that's our business in the human form of life. That Krishna consciousness is revived by the chanting of Hare Krishna. It doesn't mean I abandon my country, I abandon my family, I abandon, neglect this body. But it means I see everything clearly. I'm not forever going to be associated with this body or this nation or this family. That's a temporary circumstance. So in this temporary circumstance, I should arrange things in such a way that I can become Krishna conscious and those for whom I'm responsible can become Krishna conscious, those around me can become Krishna conscious. And then the human life is successful. Srila Prabhupada called that making the best use of a bad bargain. The body is a bad bargain for the soul, but we can make the best use of it by engaging the body, mind, intelligence, everything in Krishna consciousness, in the service of Krishna. That will be the right use of everything that we have. Okay, we can stop here and see what kind of questions we might have this evening.
Every living entity undergoes 6 transformations.
Mm.
Now, a human body has many cells.
Mm.
At a cellular level, there are 6 transformations.
Mm.
So, does each cell also has a soul?
Mm. Sometimes it's analyzed that way. That the cell, what are the lives of a cell? They may have such a soul. But anyway, we're the soul for the whole body. There are so many other living entities who are also residents in the body. There are so many microbes, there are so many viruses hanging out there. There are so many flora in the intestinal tract. There's a lot of guys in there. But, well, one big shot in the body, yeah, that's us.
It's analogical to say like Krishna is a super controller,
mm-hmm.
and then we are all living entities who we have limited control.
Yeah, very limited control, because you're the big shot in the body, but some little shot, so small that you can't even see him, knocks you down for a week, right? Or sends you for a week so that you have to spend the week most of the time in the toilet. Mm-hmm. Some little bug that you can't even see. We're thinking we're so powerful that he can knock you down. And there's so many other things that they can do that's called pathology. Studying all of those little guys and how they can mess up your existence in different ways. We're thinking we're the controller, but a little microorganism can take away our control. Sometimes they take away our control. We can't control even the basic functions of the body or the mind because some little microorganism is in the way. And how much control do we have? You get bitten by one little mosquito and there's, one little... Is it a virus that they have?
Virus.
It's a virus, right? And then you've got malaria, you've got so many problems. Sometimes you die. You're forced out of the body by one little microorganism. It kicks you out. So how much control do we have? Is that okay?
Mm-hmm. Or in this life, if we put our hand in some fire, then there's some pain, and then we're, next time we see fire, there's some less attachment to the fire, more, aloofness.
Mm.
Now, just in the span of life, when someone goes through old age, disease, and death, let's say they don't have any transcendental knowledge along with it, but is there some detachment that grows from that, or it has nothing to do, in other words, just everybody goes through a lot of inconvenience in the last part of their life.
Everyone goes through a lot of inconvenience in the last part of their life. So do they develop detachment? Do they see what's going on and become detached.
Is it a gradual, a little bit of detachment grows? Or
gradual, little bit of detachment grows, or it depends upon the modes of nature in which one is situated. There, we know there are three modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. And according to the modes that one has acquired, one has a certain way of living, certain way of thinking, certain way of acting. So the person who's in the mode of ignorance is characterized by ignorance, by stupidity, by dullness, by not getting it. He's so thick that he sees but he can't see. The drunkard is the typical example. You just can't tell him that he's ruining his life by spending it in the tavern. You could throw statistics at him, you can whatever you want, but he's so dull that he doesn't get it, and he'll go keep going there, and that's what he does for enjoyment. Kills himself. He's in the mode of ignorance. In the mode of passion, one imagines that acquisition will make him happy, and satisfaction of the demands of the senses will make him happy. So people are chasing after money, people are buying big cars, people are chasing after women, people are chasing after, they're gratifying their tongues all over the place, going to this restaurant, that restaurant, eating this, trying that, going there, doing this, to enjoy. And in the mode of goodness, one cultivates knowledge. Sattvam sanjayate jnanam. From the mode of goodness, knowledge arises. In the mode of goodness, your philosopher, your thoughtful person, tries to see what is what, analyzes, observes, and from that, in that mode, detachment will come. Person will see, well, wait a second, I'm doing this, and the more I do it, the more miserable I get. That doesn't make any sense. I'm thinking this, but it's really not that, it's something else. So he tries to understand by books, by study, perhaps by hearing from wise people, by contemplation, and he can gradually develop a kind of detachment. So we say a wise old man. He's seen so much, and he's supposed to be wise in his old age. But there are so many foolish old men also. Prabhupada gave the example because he was staying in Paris sometimes, visiting the devotees there. And near the temple, there were some clubs. And Prabhupada saw that there were like 70-year-old men, 80-year-old men, who would spend good money to go to the club and mix with young girls. And Prabhupada said, you know, what kind of enjoyment will they have? But that's what they've cultivated, that kind of conception of enjoyment, that attachment to enjoyment. And so even though they're unfit to get it, just physically not equipped, still they're trying to enjoy. This Viagra comes in that category. From what I understand, Viagra is a miraculous drug, but it's contraindicated for heart patients. It's contraindicated for heart patients. It can cause fatality when taken by heart patients. And therefore, it was reported in medical circles that there were heart patients who were going to someone other than their doctor, some other doctor who didn't know their history, in order to get this Viagra prescribed. That means they'd rather die than give up sex. Giving up sex is worse than death for them. They'll risk death for sex. And that too in their old age, because the young men are not taking Viagra. old men, heart patients, what will they enjoy? But still, attached, let me enjoy, let me enjoy. That means passion. Passion and ignorance. Knowledge, goodness is not evident there. So according to the modes of nature, the person in ignorance and passion will die attached. He'll hold on. We see these politicians, they're like rotting in office, but they won't give up their post. Because they're attached. They don't know anything beyond that. Their eyes of knowledge are closed. And of course, the person who's cultivating Krishna consciousness is coming to the spiritual platform, Sagunan Samitityaitan, Brahmabhuyaya Kalpate, Vairagya Vidya Nijabhakti Yoga. He's developing detachment and knowledge, Janayati Ashu Vairagya Gyanam Shayaravitaka. By devotional service, automatically knowledge, detachment, they're included in the package. But those who don't cultivate devotional service are controlled by the modes of nature, and especially by passion and ignorance. We don't see much detachment developing. The old men, do they go off to the forest to cultivate spiritual realization? They say, well, I've lived for so many years and my death is coming. So let me finally understand the purpose of my life and get free from material existence. No, they go live on a golf course somewhere. And they spend their days knocking a little white ball around. Very sad, actually. This is after millions and millions of lifetimes. They've got the human form of life. And now, as that life reaches its conclusion, they're puttering around. Going around in little golf carts and knocking a ball into a hole.
I heard Prabhupada cry when he saw Ramaswami.
Yeah, I heard that. It's enough to bring tears to your eyes. That after so many lifetimes and lifetimes, the living entity has gotten this opportunity, and that's what he's doing. And then he loses it. He leaves this body, leaves this human life, and we don't know when he'll get that opportunity again. So therefore, the Shastras are urging, Turanam Yate, this is urgent. One should urgently take up Krishna consciousness while we have this human form of life.
I liked what you said about the sense of sight and light entering the eye and so forth. But it got me wondering, does the subtle body have sense organs? And if so, what part do they play?
Does the subtle body have sense organs? Interesting question. The subtle body has the mind, which is the center of the senses. It doesn't have its, as far as I know, its own eyes, ears, nose, and so on. But it receives input from all of these senses and then plays with it. And it's on the basis of that mind, on the basis of the subtle body, that the gross body comes. That's also described in this section of Bhagavad Gita in the 15th chapter. How Shrotram Chakshu Sparshanam Tapcha Rasanam Granam Evacha Adhishtanam Manaschaya Vishayana Pasevate. Because I have an idea in my mind of enjoying in a certain way. That mentality, as it were, attracts the next set of senses. We see gross develops from subtle. First I think about eating a pakora, then I go to the pakora counter, then I eat the pakora. First it's the mind, and from the mind everything follows. So the mind is called the subtle sense, or the sense within. And it's the basis of the gross senses. It's subtle. It doesn't have, organs, physical organs like what we have. like the gross physical body has, but it has its own subtle business. And it's frustrating, therefore, if one takes the body, say, of a ghost, the ghost's problem is that he has all the subtle stuff going on, but no physical means to satisfy his ideas, his notions of enjoyment. I want to eat, but I don't have gross senses with which to eat. I want to do this, I want to do that, I don't have it. Therefore, the ghosts become mad, or they try to enjoy vicariously by taking over someone else's body and doing what they want to do through that body. But it's a very awkward and very frustrating sort of existence. But the soul has its own spiritual senses. Okay. Yes?
If the ghost has all the feelings, then why doesn't the ghost say, well, let me go pray and get free?
Why doesn't the ghost, if he has all feelings, say, let me pray and become free? The ghosts are troubled souls. Just, for example, we see people who are practically haunted. If you go to the where the drunkards are or the crazy people, they're practically like ghosts themselves. So why don't they just wise up and chant Hare Krishna, pray to Krishna, and get free from all their troubles? It's because they're tormented souls. Their minds are not in the proper order. So the ghosts are like that. They're, first of all, sinful, as a general principle. One doesn't become a ghost by pious activities. So they're sinful, and what is that? Yesham trantakatam papam janana punyakarmana te dvandvamoha nirmukta prajante nandridhavata. Those who are freed from sinful reactions and engaged in pious activities, they're the ones who can be freed from illusion and duality and engage with determination in the service of the Lord. Those who are too sinful, those who are absorbed in maya, they don't turn toward Krishna. Therefore, sometimes it's described that practically everyone is like a ghost in this material existence. We're all as if haunted by ghosts because we're acting foolishly against our own self-interest. So the ghosts have a problematic... The best thing for the ghosts is that if they get the mercy of a devotee. Lord Shiva, Bhutanath, the ghosts take shelter of him, and because he's very merciful, Vaishnava Anamita Shambhu. So he gradually gives them the opportunity to get free from that ghostly life.
Maharaj, there was one story, the pastime of Gokarna and his brother. His brother was a ghost who got delivered by...
We're going to tell ghost stories tonight. I can see it coming. Yes.
He was delivered by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam.
Ah, yeah. There are many such instances. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also, there was some ghost in a tree, and people were all afraid, but he just had Bhagavatam recitation going on, and after a few days, everything was all right. So yes, even the ghosts will be liberated by hearing the holy name of the Lord.
Sometimes it happens that people sense that things are going to happen in the advance of time.
Mm-hmm.
So how they sense that happening?
Sometimes people sense that in advance that things are going to happen. How is that possible? Well, sometimes it's possible just by logic. You know, you put a little baby next to the candy and you know what's going to happen next.
I mean, my question is about spiritual knowledge.
But spiritual?
Spiritually, yeah.
How do you mean?
I mean, sometimes people think, I heard a lot of the people, they said that this is going to happen in my life in future.
Yeah, that's not exactly spiritual. That's still material. Just like there are people, they have some capability that everybody's guessing what will happen in the stock market. And most people guess either terribly wrong or sometimes good, sometimes bad, kind of average. And then there's some people, they're just boom, 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 boom. They just keep getting it right. Not many of us, but there are some people, they at least they have a long run until finally something happens and they crash. But, you know, they're ahead of the market. They just see what's going to happen next. And it's not exactly by logic, because everyone else is logical and so on. But they have a gift. So that's by nature's arrangement. Just like someone can play music. They have a gift that they'll play beautiful music. Then some of us are tone deaf. We just don't get it. Some of us will have very good artistic sense. We'll appreciate how different colors go together and so on. And some of us, you know, we just can't tell the difference. So we appreciate it, but we could never do it. Some of us can cook wonderfully. You know, we put the ingredients together. We never measure anything. We just boom, 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 boom. And it's always fantastic. And somebody else, you know, boom, 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 and it's a disaster. Or even they measure and it's a disaster. Or it's just plain. You know, it doesn't have the same flair. So these are gifts of material nature. Someone's very good looking, someone's very plain looking, someone's very talented, someone's not so talented, someone's very strong, someone's not so strong. So some people have this intuitive gift also, that they'll perceive. And there's a lot of research that's been done about this in among the scientists called parapsychologists. There's a lot of documentation and statistics and all of that sort of stuff. It can get very interesting. But it's material. It's still material.
Also yogic powers.
Yogic powers. Yeah, the yogis. These things are there. The yogis can do things that are wonderful. They can see the future. They can make things appear from different parts of the universe. But they can influence people's minds. But this is not spiritual. They can become lighter than the lightest, or smaller than the smallest, or heavier than the heaviest. These are all material things. Spiritual means eternal. That I can see 10 years or 20 years or 50 years or 10 minutes into the future doesn't make me spiritual. Just means I have a material capability that others may not have. Just like someone can lift weights, and someone 20 pounds, someone 40 pounds. But that's not spiritual. Just means they're materially more capable than the other person. So someone has that mentally also. Someone can add figures, boom, 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 boom. Some person's, you know, a year behind. These are material things. It's not that the student who's at the head of the class is spiritual, just materially more capable. So these psychic powers, yogic powers, clairvoyance, and so on, these are material. And the spiritual power is the power of surrender to Krishna. That's actually spiritual power. First of all, the power to discriminate between matter and spirit, to see that I'm not this body, that I'm spirit soul, and then to see, well, what should I do as spirit soul? This is where, and to detach myself from material existence, not involve myself in material existence, or become more sophisticated, but get out of material existence. That's spiritual power. That's a different thing.
So here is another question. How we can surrender through the Krishna?
How we can we surrender to Krishna?
What is the process?
Well, the first process is to have an interest in doing it. So we're already there. Then the next thing is to associate with the devotees who have a similar interest. Power of numbers. Then the next thing is to find guidance, proper guidance, to find a bona fide spiritual master who can give us further instruction. And under that guidance, to take up the different practices, to hear, to chant, to read, to worship the deity, and so on. Then that will free us from so many unwanted things in the heart. And then step by step we'll make further progress. Or it can be said, anukul yasya sankalpa pratikul yasya varsha. That surrender is to accept everything favorable for spiritual advancement in Krishna consciousness and put aside everything unfavorable. Just like we have these chanting Hare Krishna, that's favorable. The devotees are chanting japa, they're joining in the kirtan, that's favorable. And gambling, intoxication, illicit sex, media, these are unfavorable. So we see that those who are serious, they gradually adopt these favorable things and put aside any unfavorable things. Is that okay?
So I have another question.
Okay.
So there's three types of the chanting. One is just orally we speak and, we speak and chant. Another is just to chant without voice come. Third is the mind chanting. So why mind chanting is the more... More affecting.
Why is there's chanting in the mind, chanting silently, and chanting out loud? Why is the chanting in the mind more effective?
Yes.
Who said it's more effective?
I mean, I heard somewhere that there are three types of the chanting. One is a word like we speak and we chant. Third is and second is that we chant, but next person cannot listen. I mean, the voice level should be like that. Third one is that if we chant by mind, that is more effective.
Actually, if you chant nicely with your voice, your mind will be focused also. We're not recommended just chant in the mind. We're recommended chant so that you can hear. The mind is wandering here and there. So trying to chant with the mind will be very difficult. Chanting so that you can chanting and hearing, shravanam kirtanam, is what we're recommended to do. That's actually more powerful for us. We can sit and chant in our minds. And we see sometimes people say, no, I don't need beads, I chant in my mind. And we know what they chant in their mind. They're chanting everything and anything. They're chanting, what they saw on the television, they're chanting what they read in the newspaper, they're chanting... Well, I have to go to the market at 10 o'clock. They're chanting so many things. Whatever the mind is busy with, so it's going on and on. And they say, yes, I chant in the mind. Chanchala hi mana Krishna pramati balabhati. Krishna explains what the mind is. Arjuna says what the mind is like. Chanchala, fickle like anything. Pramati, crazy. Balavad, very strong. Bad enough to be crazy, but crazy and strong. And Dridham, very determined, obstinate. So trying to deal with that kind of mind by silent chanting will not be effective. It will be effective if we're very advanced in spiritual realization. But for the rest of us, it will not be effective. It will be the opposite. This chanting so that we can hear will be effective. Like different medicine prescribed for different people. If you just go into the pharmacy and say, give me the most powerful medicine you got. That's not the way to take medicine. The way to take it is to take what the doctor prescribes. He says, for you, this medicine is good. Not just give me the most powerful thing. So silent chanting in the mind may be most powerful for those who are adept at such things, the very advanced devotees. But for us, hearing and chanting will be much more effective.
So there is a stage for that chanting, like if powerful devotees, they can chant in the mind also.
They'll chant in the mind, they'll chant out. It's not that they'll say, no, I've taken a vow of silence, I only chant in the mind. But they'll chant out loud, they'll chant in the mind. The body is going, the mind is going, everything is going toward Krishna. And in our present state, everything's going the opposite way. So we need this hearing and chanting to bring us, to rope us in, to bring us in touch with Krishna. Hearing and chanting is recommended.
What is the proper etiquette when the speaker chants the prayers? Is it proper etiquette to chant with them, or we should
What's the proper etiquette when the speaker chants the prayers? Well, I haven't seen a scriptural statement about it. Srila Prabhupada just used to chant by himself. Well, let's look at it this way. It's the duty of the speaker to offer pranams before speaking. That's the etiquette for him. And before I speak something about Krishna consciousness, I should offer my obeisances to my spiritual master and to the Lord. That's his duty. So that's sufficient. If he chants, that's enough. But it's become sort of customary in our society that everybody else will also chant. Even sometimes we find that they chant ahead of the speaker. That's not very good. The speaker is chanting at one speed and they're ahead of him. That's not very good at all. At least if you're going to chant along. I've sort of resigned myself to the idea that, well, everybody else is going to chant. It's not bad, it's just the way it is. I haven't seen any specific injunctions one way or the other. Okay. Yes?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, what is Krishna's answer to Arjuna's question on jnanam and gayam?
That will come. You have to stay. That's coming attractions. What is Gyanam and Gayam? Knowledge and the object of knowledge. You'll find in this 13th chapter that's described. He describes the items of knowledge, the process of knowledge, and he describes the object of knowledge also. Finally, Krishna himself is the ultimate object of knowledge. Yes.
Maharaj, yesterday you mentioned about the some people, you know, the Mayavadis, they talk about the formlessness of the God, of the Lord. But they also say that that you can pray to the deities, or you can pray to the deities, look at them, because that will help you focus.
Yeah. Prabhupada describes this as a time-serving mentality. That the ultimate is impersonal, but to get to that impersonal, I'll pray to the deity. So the deity for them is sort of a, Prabhupada said, like a ladder. Or they give the example that they'll climb the ladder and then they'll kick the ladder away once they've got to the top of the wall. Prabhupada illustrated one time this mentality. He was walking in Mayapur with a group of devotees, and one of them was Bhavananda. And Prabhupada was crossing, I think he was crossing like a ditch or something, you know. Bhavananda was kind of gave him his arm and was helping him. And then when Prabhupada crossed, then he pushed Bhavananda away. And, you know, Bhavananda's just like startled, you know, what did I do? The Prabhupada said, this is the Mayavadi mentality.
So how can we counter, or how can we say that this is not correct? Actually, this is not right, or this is not true.
Yes, from Shastra, Krishna says, Matta parataram nanyat kinchid asti janat. There's nothing higher than me. The Brahmanohi pratishtaham, I'm the basis of the impersonal Brahma. Param Brahma, Param Dham. Arjuna says, you're the Param Brahma. Practically, Prabhupada's whole library is dedicated to this campaign of defeating the Mayavad point of view. There's a lot of arguments there. You read the books and pick up one argument after another. Is that okay?
Thank you.
Krishna conscious?
During the Krishna conscious process, one is engaged in Krishna conscious process, there's churning of consciousness. Churning
of consciousness.
Yeah. During that time, many anarthas appear which didn't appear even earlier when a person was not a devotee.
Yeah.
And they say finally, you know, like, so at what stage do you know, like, you'll be able to overcome all this anarthas? They say more anarthas appear which didn't appear earlier.
One more anarthas appear, it doesn't mean that you become more obnoxious than when you started. It means we become sensitive to the things that were obnoxious. You know, just like if you live in a dirty house, you don't even know that you're in a dirty house. You know, people who live in these dirty beer bottles all around and everything, they just don't get it. They think, well, you know, this is normal. But if somehow or other they get some cultural training or they become more advanced, somehow come to a higher level, then they start to say, whoa, I'm living in a dirty place. And they, you know, start putting those beer bottles away. But then, you know, the more they clean, the more they see. The more you clean, the more you see how dirty things are. You don't really see how dirty your house is until you start to clean it, right? So it's like that. It's not that because I'm chanting Hare Krishna, I didn't smoke before, but now I'll start smoking. It's not like that. But I've become sensitive that so many things I'm doing that are spiritually counterproductive, so many things are in my heart that are really junk. There's so much attachment, there's so much illusion, kaam, krodh, lobh, mada, moha, matsarya. One becomes sensitive to those things by the cleansing process. And so, because unless you see them, yeah, it's like that. As we're chanting, we're purifying the heart, and this stuff is, the dust is flying, but cleaning is advancing. Anartha Nivritti. The anarthas are being extinguished. Should we stop here? Yes, okay, I got the nod. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.